History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And they don't have to go untold, as long as we're willing to do something about it. Ask a few questions. Take the time to listen as memories from long ago start to take on new life in the here and now. Our idea here is to honor our veterans for their service and their sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in that process, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but more often than not, we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Jim Kunkel of Santa Ynez, California, will turn 100 years old next month during the Central Coast Air Fest in Santa Maria. Don't you think we should all be there to celebrate with him? If you heard our last episode, you sure do. I read for you the citation for the Distinguished Service Cross Jim earned with his actions in the air over Aachen, Germany in 1944, but we ran out of time and didn't get to hear the full story of that mission or what followed. So we're going to pick things up when Jim found himself alone as a single P-38 Lightning pilot battling approximately 20 German fighter planes. Feel free to access the first part of Jim's story in podcast form at hometownheroesradio.com, and I'll go ahead and give you that citation again here to set the stage for how the rest of that fateful mission unfolded. While flying as rear man in a squadron of an armed reconnaissance mission, Lieutenant Kunkel noticed that his squadron was about to be surprised by a vastly superior force of enemy aircraft. Unable to summon his leader on the radio, he alone unhesitatingly pulled away from his formation and vigorously attacked the enemy, immediately destroying one of his aircraft. In doing so, Lieutenant Kunkel placed himself in a position to be attacked from the rear and above. When this attack materialized, many hits were registered on his aircraft, which caught fire, burning his face, neck, and hands. Despite his burning plane and the gunfire from enemy planes, Lieutenant Kunkel continued his attack against the vastly superior enemy force and succeeded in destroying a second enemy aircraft, breaking off combat only when forced to parachute to safety when his left fuel tank exploded. The heroism and aggressiveness displayed by Lieutenant Kunkel on this occasion reflect the highest credit upon himself and the armed forces of the United States. So take us back there, Jim. This is really just a 5 or 6 minute stretch of your life that would completely change your life. What was it like in the middle of what you referred to last time as a rat race in the skies over Aachen?
I fired at several aircraft. That first hit that I took set something on fire behind me. I don't know what it was, and I assume that it was the hydraulic tank, which was right behind the cockpit. I'd been hit pretty hard. In fact, a couple came in over my shoulder and knocked my instrument panel out. So we must have been in a pretty tight turn when that happened. I realized that I wasn't going to get much help, so I was very concerned. We didn't have endless ammunition. You had about 30 seconds total for a gun. So I knew there were quite a few targets, so I was picking my target carefully, and the minute I'd feel a hit or something, I'd have to break off whatever I was doing and then look for another target. This went on for what seemed quite a long time, and the P-38 had the only cool air coming into the cockpit came in by your left knee. I'm on the tail of this 190, and I think it was probably a 190 that got me, but there were a couple 109s involved in all of this at the same time. All of a sudden, I see out of my left wing, I got some hits out there from 20. The 20 millimeter would hit, and it would see a flash, and I saw flashes off my left wing, and I'm in a turn, pretty violent turn actually, and he's walking them up my wing, and I can see the hits coming, and it was, you know, it's a microsecond, and all of a sudden this cold air vent by my left knee looked like a blowtorch. That vent came in the leading edge of the wing right by the pilot's nacelle and went through by where your fuel tanks are. And your fuel tanks were sitting in the cockpit. You could reach out and put your hands on the tanks. You were sitting between them. Next minute, next microsecond later, there's this flame can in the cockpit. The next second, I'm falling through a cloud. I don't know which end's up, but I came out the bottom. I knew the clouds were around 5,000 feet because we'd been yo-yoing up and down through them during this combat. I came out the bottom of the cloud realizing that I'm falling looking up. And I thought I was behind the German, there's no question that I was behind the German lines because we were northeast of Aachen, downtown Aachen. Well, I'm behind the lines. I got to be careful about where I, when I open this chute. So I rolled over and fell face down until everything looked real close and pulled the ripcord. I was in the chute. I had a .45 automatic in a shoulder holster. I undid my bottom straps on my chute because I knew I was going to hit the ground running no matter which direction. I was trying to charge that .45 and I didn't realize my hands were burnt. I dropped the thing. And this is, like I say, it's microseconds we're talking about. I came down in a courtyard of a red brick building, and there was a tree in the middle of the courtyard, and my chute hung up on that tree, and I just jerked to a stop. Got out of the chute immediately. Don't remember too much about it. All of a sudden, I realized I had that .45, but I still couldn't charge it because my hands were burnt. I knew I could see when I was falling face down. I watched that damn ground coming up until it looked real close before I pulled the ripcord. And so I knew I could see, but it was getting dark. And I thought, I must have been down here for quite a while because this happened at 5:45, double British summertime. So it should have been real light. And I thought, I've been on the ground quite a while, and I'm still moving. I guess I'm walking, but anyway, I was along a hedgerow. I saw some guys down in a trench, in a depression, and I thought they were Germans. I was not inclined to get into a shooting match with a .45 that's not charged. Again, what seemed a long time was just a second or two, and I realized I saw net on their helmet. Well, our guys had net on the helmet. Well, so did Germans and some in the paratroopers, but that didn't bother me at that time. I thought, boy, these are friends. So I threw my hands up and threw my .45 over the shoulder, and some GI got it. I came down in a little town called Erlemont. The 1st Infantry Division had moved up there the night before and taken the area, and it was in the Siegfried Line. So they had witnessed this whole battle. It was all up right over the top of them. So when they saw my chute, they sent a patrol out to pick me up. And I wasn't maybe a couple hundred yards from their position and a couple hundred yards from the German position. So anyway, they came out, they got out of a foxhole and came and got me, and I ended up in an aid camp. I must have not looked too bad because the commanding colonel of the 16th Regiment took me to his tent, ate something, which stayed down about 15 minutes till I got out of there. But I was pretty badly burned, and my face and hands, and that was about the extent of it. But the infantry, I was pretty dejected about being shot down, what I thought so easily shot down. So I'm going back through the hospital, and they took us from the aid station to a train, and we took a train to Paris. Took me into the American hospital in Paris, and this young lieutenant guy walks up to me and says, "Hell, I know you. We picked you up." And his name was Leonard Scott. He said, "You know, we witnessed that whole fight that you were involved in up there." And he gave me quite a few details. So at least I put up a halfway decent show, I guess. So we stayed together. And you know, Leonard had the Distinguished Service Cross. I didn't know that. We stayed together, and we actually ended up at the Netley Hospital in Southampton, England, together. I remember talking to him. He told me, he said, "You know, I made the landings in North Africa with the 1st Division. I made the landings in Sicily with the 1st Division. They diverted us from Italy to England, and the 1st Division was one of the first to hit the beach in Normandy." He said, "I made the landing in Normandy. 7 o'clock in the morning, I hit the beach. At 7:20, they had me on a boat, all shot up, taking me to England." So he said, I didn't last long, and he's a second lieutenant. And I said, well, you started in North Africa. You went through Sicily, and you made the landings in Normandy. And now here you are up in Germany where I was shot down. You saw the fight. Now you're in the hospital. And he said, well, he said, that's the life of an infantryman. And I said, well, didn't they ever promote you? Like first lieutenant? He didn't say a whole lot, but, you know, we weren't in that hospital in England 2 hours, and this pretty nurse showed up, and she had his Class A uniform, dress uniform with her, and he was gone. He didn't ask permission. He didn't do anything. He was just gone. He showed up a week and a half later. So I figured out, I asked him, I said, how often have you been a first lieutenant? And been demoted. In later life, one of my good friends, who was chairman of the board of Flying Tigers Airlines, his wife, she wrote a book based on all the letters he had written home. And I knew he'd been an infantry officer in Europe, but it just never occurred to me. I read the book, and it said on the 16th of September, 1944, he was in Ellendorf, Germany. He was in a bunker. In the letter to her, it said, there was an air fight going on up above us, and all of a sudden, I'm showered with a bunch of shell casings. You know, we kicked out all the shell casings when we're firing. And he says, I said, the hell with this. I went back in my concrete bunker. You know, after reading that, I called him. He'd retired from Flying Tigers. He was down in Palm Springs, and I said, God, I said, I never realized, but, you know, that's where they dug my airplane up, was Ellendorf. And he said, I remember the night well. I remember the fight. I watched part of it. He said that we just got to get together and we'll compare notes and so forth. And, you know, he had a heart attack and passed away before I got to see him. Well, I looked for years for Leonard Scott. I knew he made it through the war, but I couldn't find him. I knew he was from Oregon. I tried to find him desperately. I thought it would have been really great to sit down with him. Never found him. No trace of him anyway. And so a couple of years ago, we're sitting on a Sunday morning, Easter Sunday. Ruth says, I'm going to find him. So she goes to her computer, and within a half hour, she's talking to his daughter. And so, unfortunately, Leonard had passed away, but he went through World War II. He went back in active duty and went through Korea and lived through that. And I found out the story of his Distinguished Service Cross. He got it in Sicily for taking on a bunch of German tanks. He probably should have left them alone. But it's funny how life maneuvers around the way it does.
And you said that, you know, on the ground, you were feeling kind of dejected for getting shot down, as you thought, pretty easily. But then you start to hear these other perspectives, and it turns out you shot down multiple enemy aircraft as part of that mission. And initially, they thought you were an ace in a day. Did I get that right? They thought you got five of them?
Well, that's what the record I have in my briefcase. It's in the file here. I had five confirmed. It's in the record. Well, when the Air Force reviewed all this, you know, to get a confirmation, it had to be witnessed, or you had to have the gun camera film, or you had to have both. Well, I had no gun camera film. All I had was the infantry, and they weren't close up on the action. I mean, you know, you could see an air battle 5,000 feet above you and see the results of it, but they didn't know if there were any other aircraft involved. So they finally, I got two confirmed, and then I heard that they had two confirmed, two probables, and one damaged. But my original, you know, if you'd asked me 10 years ago, before I found this out, if anybody asked me, I said, well, my record says I had five confirmed. Maybe they ran into each other.
Well, and I guess that's the question, because you're the one that lived it, and you talked to guys in the aftermath. Is it your belief that you did get five of them that day?
I have no idea. I didn't know that I got two of them. So count your blessings and take what they give you.
Yeah.
No, I'd fire at them, and I'd only get a burst in before I'd have to break off. And when I first went to England, I met a sergeant pilot in the RAF, older type of guy. He'd gone the whole way through the Battle of Britain. I've looked him up, and he's on the list. He gave me two suggestions. This was before my first mission. He said, if you got a Jerry on your tail, do something violent. Doesn't make any difference what it is. Just do something violent as you, anything you can imagine. And the second one was, watch their exhaust. That's the first indication of what they're going to do. If you get a puff of black smoke, they're going to the ha-ha switch, which was the injection system that for full power, or they're pulling the throttle the whole way off and they're going to try to get you to overrun them. Keep your eye on their exhaust. And I remember using it. Again, the whole thing is just a flashback of what were probably seconds of that. The infantry guys estimated 6 minutes, and they estimated 20-plus aircraft. German aircraft.
And you were the only American aircraft.
My squadron just kept on going, and somebody said, I never saw the report, but apparently one of the fellows said, I thought I saw Jim on fire. And that would have been that first, I'm flying away from him by this time, because I had made a 180-degree turn. So I knew I was, that must have been when I was hit initially that they saw that. But outside of that, they kept up, and about 30 minutes later, our guys are still strafing down on the ground. The whole squadron got hit. They claimed 3 or 4, and the Germans claimed that on the 16th of September, they had this engagement with the 370th group. They claimed 4 P-38 shot down. The Germans were pretty meticulous about confirming their victories. So, but I was the only one lost, and we shot down maybe 3 or 4 of them. I don't know. I don't know if that included the ones I shot down or whether the group shot down. I never saw the combat report, and I never made a combat report. So a lot of how this happened, I don't know.
Well, I think you probably do have perspective on this, though, because you've been, you know, marinating in aviation your whole life, and you have a feel for how unique it is. For one American plane to take on 20 of the enemy and survive, that doesn't happen every day, does it? Have you met anybody else who did something like that?
Yeah, they're going to give the Congressional Medal of Honor to a Navy guy who took on 4 MiGs. I know him. He's a good friend of my Navy friends. I think it's great. And this happened during Vietnam, and it's been a secret operation that he actually took on these aircraft. And I think he shot down 3 of them. They gave him the Navy Cross initially, and then kept the whole thing under wraps. And now they're going to give him the Congressional Medal of Honor.
And I know you're humble about all this, but let me ask it this way. If before you took off that day, if they had said, hey, it's going to be you against a combination of 20 ME-109s and FW-190s, what do you think your chances of survival would be?
I don't know that to this day, I don't think I can answer that. I'd say we're damn good. Where else could they find such a wonderful pilot to take on? So, no, I don't know. It never occurred to me really to think too much about that.
It's time for our first break, but there is so much more to come with 99-year-old Jim Kunkel of Santa Ynez, California. If you ever visit the airfield in France that he took off from on that mission that earned him the Distinguished Service Cross, it's called A1, you'll find a street there named in Jim's honor, and he will be the guest of honor at the Central Coast Air Fest next month in Santa Maria, California. I have all that information linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. Or you can just go to centralcoastairfest.com, and Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.